The following is one of a series of spiritual conferences given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J. Father Hardin is a professor of theology and teaches at the Pontifical Institute for Advanced Studies in Catholic Doctrine at St. John's University, New York. Father is well known as a lecturer, retreat master, and author. These conferences are ordained to help anyone, priest, religious, or layman, who is seriously striving for perfection to advance in the spiritual life. They will be worth listening to over and over again to delve into the depths of the truths of our faith. In the following conference, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, What is the role of freedom in the pursuit of holiness? Father Hardin.
We might begin by observing that there are so many elements in the pursuit of sanctity that we are liable to overlook. The most important one on our side, the most important element on God's side, is obviously His grace. The most important on our side is our liberty. My purpose in this class is to look at certain aspects of the subject. And while saying just a few words about each aspect, to gradually pull things together in such a way that we will have at least a broad overview and an appreciation of the importance of our freedom in the pursuit of holiness. There are mainly three parts that I wish to address myself to. First, what is the contemporary attitude towards freedom, which has affected all of us? Then briefly ask ourselves, what is this freedom that everybody is for and everybody wants? What is it? And then most practically, how is freedom related to our faith, to our life of prayer, to our avoidance of sin, and our response to grace? So that collectively we can say that if we use our freedom rightly, we shall be holy. The contemporary attitude. No one really knows why there is so much concern about freedom in today's world. However, as far as we can judge, perhaps the fundamental reason why there is so much concern and desire for freedom is because there is so little of it in the modern world. Whole societies, and not only those behind the Iron Curtain, are suffering from the most extensive and deep denial of even the most basic human liberties that I think human history has ever known. We assume that in tyrannical societies, like, say, Red China, or the countries that are under communist domination in Europe, we assume that the people who are living under such tyranny will have many of their liberties denied them. we are not so liable to admit that even in so-called free countries like America, freedom is widely and gravely denied. What freedom, for example, does the average Catholic couple have in the United States today to even bring into the world the children that they honestly believe God wants them to have? How free are they? My first convert was a young woman who, shortly after entering the church, was married, wrote to me from the hospital where she had her first child, very happy over her motherhood, but very sad. It happened to be in Detroit. John, she said, her husband, just visited me and told me that we cannot come back to our apartment. We did not know when we rented the apartment that no children are allowed in those apartments. So there is widespread denial in practice and in principle of real human freedom. The psychological and social sciences, not quite universally, but pretty close, hold that human actions are the result of the famous triad that every psychologist has memorized of heredity, environment, and education. We do what we do because of our genes, because of the environment and situation in which we were reared, and the education we have had. So that one of my Jesuit confreres, who has been teaching criminology for some years, tells me he does not know of a single textbook in American criminology which still recognizes human freedom. Not one. That when people do wrong, it's not because they freely choose to do wrong, but because of their background, because of their upbringing, their education, the slums they come from, as though, how fast our social scientists are learning, that not all crime is in the slums. Yet, the myth goes on, that human beings are not really responsible for what they do. This has affected the thinking of many people in the Catholic Church. It has affected many aspects of religious life. I put it in large measure at the base of the convulsion in religious communities today, that people are not really responsible. It's because of this or that. With Shakespeare, it's always the stars we blame. When in the airports, I glance over the paperback offerings and see the huge spread of books in horoscopy. Millions believe in horoscopes. To me, this symbolizes the abdication of their own responsibility for their future. Given then this contemporary attitude, which is one of either neglect or even positive denial, that we are really free to be either good or bad or in between, it behooves us as religious to ask ourselves, well, if we are free and we keep saying we are, what does it mean, or should it mean, for us in the pursuit of holiness? But before we get into that, we've got to ask ourselves what this freedom that we hold really is. Human freedom is very difficult to define. In fact, it cannot really be defined. It is one of those ultimates of our existence. The best we can do is describe it. The ultimate you experience, and you describe the experience. Human freedom is the ability we have to choose what we want, even when there is no external constraint to do so, no force, no compulsion, no threat, deeply interior. This power of choice is therefore a power that is within us, residing in our wills. The expression free will is not one word, it's two words. The will can do many things, but the first and most important thing the will can do is to choose. And this is the object of our reflection. Free will means we are describing a quality of the will. It is free. Now this power of choice residing on our wills is a power by which we can, then I'll have all kinds of choose and chose coming, by which we can choose to act or not act. You see, we can choose not to act. I might have chosen not to come to Hamas Springs. Well, I did. The power by which we can choose this course of action over another. So we first choose to either act or not act. A lot of people during life choose not to act. By the way, not an unremarkable statement. Having chosen to act, we can act in a variety of ways. Again, the power by which we can choose to accept what we have chosen or reject it after we've made the first choice needs saying. It's one thing to choose. It's another thing to keep choosing. We hardly have words to express it. Ah, but that wheel is constantly active. And I can either, having chosen it, decide, well, that was a bad move. So I unchoose. That too is freedom. To unchoose what I had, to perfect tense, chosen. If we choose to accept what we had first chosen, we are then free to continue accepting as long as we want to, and what bears emphasis, just because we want to. Where every word counts, just because we want to. No one else, not even the omnipotent God, will force us. And we want to. If we don't want to, we will unchoose what we have chosen. Implicit, then, in our liberty, and this is not so obvious, is the ability to choose to think. Now, if you have any doubt that some people choose not to think, all you've got to do is teach. Some people choose not to think. Nice people, very pleasant to meet, very companionable. They just don't want to think. And it is their privilege. Fine minds, at least a mediocre teacher, but they don't want to think. So, implicit in this liberty of ours is the ability to choose to think of reasons why we want something. Some people take more time than others. We all need some time to choose to think of reasons why, when we finally decide to choose something, we will choose it. Because we know we've got to have reason. Unless we stultify our reason, we can't do that too. But if we want reasons, we've got to use our minds. And the mind, if it doesn't, the mind has no choice. The mind is not the will. The will has got to talk to the mind. Now look here, whatever name you have for your minds. Start thinking. You're kidding. No. Start thinking. Well, you've never told me this before. Well, I'm telling you now. There is something which we want. We need reasons to choose it. And above all, we need reasons to continue choosing it. For that, the mind must be turned on by the will. So the mind, under the will's influence, will give reasons to the will why the will should choose in the first place and maintain its choice, even through a lifetime. Or either reasons why we want something, or to think for reasons why we should give up something else. Because in case we don't know, we do. The trouble is, we don't always look at our minds to see the reasons that the mind tells us. Every choice of one thing means the choice of giving up that which contradicts that which we choose. So then, reasons why we should give up something else or reject something else which is incompatible with the object of our choice. Some people get married. How many young wives or husbands have told me, wives, for example, they chose to marry, but they didn't realize that part of that choice of marriage was, well, like cooking for a husband. But she can't cook. She never learned. Well, now, she really has no choice if she wants to keep that man, if he's normal. The mind then must shore up reasons why, having chosen something, I must then sacrifice something else, give it up, reject it, because if I want this, if I want A, and A and B are incompatible, then I cannot have B. And by now I don't know how many religious and priests I've struggled with where this is their problem. They want A, but they would also like to have at least a piece of B. But no. And the will can tell the mind, now look, you so-and-so, if you really want A, you've got to start thinking why you must give up B. That's something about the meaning of this human freedom. Now the various relationships, just illustrative of the ways in which our freedom lies at the heart of our life as Christians and as religious. Regarding the faith, we know that the virtue of faith infused into us, say when we were baptized, if we were baptized in infancy, is the virtue of the mind. We believe when we reach sufficient maturity to be able to make acts of the virtue of faith, we believe with the mind. Not with the emotions, not even with the will. We believe with the mind. Because faith is the assent, mind, to God's revelation. Or as I tell my students, faith is man's response to God's revelation. God speaks. When man listens, he believes. That's faith. Nevertheless, affirming that we believe with the mind, but without the wills entering the picture, and specifically the free will, we may have been baptized in infancy, but as you know, we all know so many people, we may have had the struggle ourselves. We must want to believe. And this covers every step of the way. Thus, we must want to see reasons why we should believe. So I've been baptized into the Catholic Church. So some teachers, say in the fifth or sixth grade, are telling me that some of these youngsters, I'm not sure whether it's precocious or something else, these kids will stand up to the sister and say, well, you're telling us because we're Catholics, we're supposed to go to Mass. We're obliged. We've got to do this and we've got to do that because we're Catholics. But I didn't choose to be baptized. So, who's telling me now that I'm supposed to go to Mass? Or do whatever the church expects me to be? Now, the answer that the teacher should tell this bright young genius, now look, Jimmy, that's right. When you were baptized, you were carried in somebody else's arms, both physically and spiritually. somebody did the profession of faith for you. Well, now that you've reached this remarkable degree of maturity, that you see, you did not choose to be baptized. You better choose real quick. Real quick. Because unless you do, the character of baptism may remain in you. But that's all. Unless you want to believe, your baptism won't help. You're just going to stop believing. So, we must want to see reasons why we should believe, and it's reasons. We must want to see reasons why we should accept the consequences of our faith. Or, say, for religious, the consequences of our religious commitment. It's one thing to have chosen the religious life. It's another thing to also choose its consequences. The Lord spares us. Oh, how kind He is. He doesn't let us see the consequences of our choices. Dear Lord, thanks. So, trusting in His providence, we did make choices. But we've got to continue wanting to see reasons why those consequences of the choices we made should be accepted. And finally, on this level of faith, not really finally, this is just the barest beginning. The relationship of freedom to faith is a huge subject. Most of what we believe is mystery, meaning that we cannot really comprehend or understand why. And consequently, it means that we've got to keep telling that mind, now look here, I know you're asking for more reasons. That's the will talking to the mind. And I appreciate your concern. But look, what I'm telling you to believe in is mysteries. I want you to accept what you cannot comprehend. The mind objects. Are you telling me to accept what I cannot really fully understand? The real presence, God's providence, the primacy of the vicar of Christ, the indwelling, the afterlife, which none of us have experienced. This is the mind objecting to the will. Are you ordering me around? Yes, dear mind, I'm ordering you around. Now stop your complaining. I'm telling you, believe. And the mind has no choice once the will makes its choice.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.